Welcome to the Road Ahead Cafe. Hang on to your hat and enjoy the ride, because you're about to get some powerful insights and practical hacks that will take your daily life to the next level. And now, here are your hosts, Rick, Frank, and Peter.
Welcome back to the Road Ahead Cafe. I'm your host, Rick Gabrielli, and I'm here with change facilitator Frank Vandenhorst and mindfulness coach Peter M. Fellows. And in this month's episode, you asked us, what do you do when confronted by a crisis? Peter, tell us something about what you're going to be sharing today.
Thank you, Rick. Well, life is like a road trip. One moment, you can be sailing down the highway, everything's flowing for you, and then out of nowhere, a semi-truck loses its control and smacks you off the road and into the ditch. What do you do when confronted by that type of a crisis? Well, as members of the Road Ahead Cafe track, we can come online and we can workshop our situation with another member, and that is tremendously useful. But I'd like to share a personal story with you from back in the day, long before track, in the days when cell phones and personal computers didn't really exist. It's about what happened to me and how I was guided to turn failure into fairly good fortune, not amazing fortune, but back on track type thing. And let me take care of my family. Let me stay on the track. There came a time in my entrepreneurial career when I lost everything. It was 1986. I was working with a partner in land development. We were to start up a business, or we were a startup business. And my partner's proven track record with another company made me sure he could do this. And I lost everything I invested. I was living in a newly constructed townhouse in the northern suburbs of Toronto with my wife, Jeannie, and one-year-old Sabrina. But I couldn't find any type of work, not even in the hospitality business, not even in retail. I was at my wit's end. When you've done everything you can think of, your next step is to stop and open up to your inner guidance. And I'll tell you about that in a minute. Rick?
Wow. Great stuff, Peter. I can't wait to hear it. Frankie, what do you got today?
You know, some time ago, I was confronted with a crisis. A dear friend of me has Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's disease is a brain disorder that leads to shakiness, stiffness, difficult walking, balancing, difficulty with coordination. And this Parkinson's disease is a progressive disorder. It's caused by the degeneration of the nerve cells of a part of the brain called the substantia nigra, which controls movement. These nerve cells die or become impaired, losing the ability to produce the important chemical called dopamine. As the disease progresses, it also leads to feelings of depression and anxiety. No fun, one could say. So how do you deal with feelings when you see someone slowly deteriorating? It's a question I asked myself, and it really hit me hard. And I felt my heart still when I'm talking about it right now. I feel my heart responding to this, because it's very something very special to see someone so becoming so ill so gradually. Well, anyway, I tell you what I did and share your story.
Well, thank you, Frankie. So here's what I'll be sharing today. I'll share a story about moving into our new home in October of 2003 and how a flood actually led to the discovery of waterfront property. Peter, let's get into it.
Thank you, Rick. Christmas was coming, and the ground was covered with a well-established layer of snow, slightly melted on top, showing the grime from the streets. And I was standing outside our post office in the frigid air of early evening. The new suburban developments had spread so quickly into the northern farmlands that they had outpaced the post office capacity to provide home mail delivery. Each evening, young urban professionals in their expensive business attire were forced to wait on a long line that stretched outside the rural post office and down the street. And the latest report from the government was that they had no budget to provide home delivery of mail for at least 2 years. As I was standing there in line, brooding on my financial crisis, waiting my turn to get into the post office and pick up my mail, if there was any, I was thinking that it was a good thing I had my little Civic Honda and it used very little gas. The gas tank was low and I had no money to fill it up. Now, people often say that they have no money. when what they really mean is they don't want to spend the money they do have on whatever it is that you're suggesting they spend it on. But I literally had none. My wallet was empty at that moment. I didn't have money for next week's groceries, let alone Christmas gifts. Entrepreneurs weren't eligible for unemployment benefits, and although I had been applying to shops and restaurants and hotels, I hadn't been able to find any work yet. I felt sick with worry, overwhelmed with a feeling of guilt, failure, and worthlessness. I felt stuck and without hope, having no idea what to do to take care of my family. My situation seemed impossible, but I realized I had to drag myself out of the quagmire of negative thoughts, so I focused on the present moment. I stomped my feet to get some feeling back into them. I clapped my gloves together to warm my hands, and the line to the post office had barely moved, and I thought, even though I have no job, I'd almost rather pay someone to get my mail than stand here like this, freezing in line. I let the thought go, refocused on the present moment, and that's when a thought, just an ordinary thought, no different from any other thought, rose up into my mind. And that thought was, what about you? It was like a light coming on because there was a lightening of my dark thoughts. Would people pay me to pick up their mail for them so they didn't have to get online? Could I temporarily earn a living this way? Because if the government had announced that we had to wait 2 years, then more than likely, because it was the government, they wouldn't get around to it for four. What if I could earn income picking up people's mail for 4 years? That would definitely give me time to find a decent paying full-time job. Life is like a road trip, but we're not the ones driving the car. We have an ADS, automatic driving system, or autopilot, our brain, and it makes the decisions usually based on the conditioning it happened to pick up along the way, mostly negative. So my autopilot says to me, but could I earn enough doing this? But what would I charge for daily home delivery? But how many people could I deliver to in one day? My dear old brain never met an opportunity it couldn't find a problem with. But we also have an inner GPS nav system, our non-conscious mind, which knows way more about what's going on and is constantly figuring out the path or road that's going to give us the most flow and fulfillment on the way to our destination, our goal. So I just said, just ask. When I got to the post office counter, as casually as I could, I said to the person behind the desk that some of my neighbors wanted me to pick up their mail. What would I need so the post office would give me their mail? And the clerk said they just had to sign a note to that effect. Now, I didn't mention my business idea to my wife, Jeannie, when I got home, because my autopilot, or auto, as I refer to him, was terrified that it might just prove to be another mirage. I paced about our basement, trying to think it all out, and I remembered my GPS thought, just ask. So I phoned one of our friends, who was a letter carrier, and asked him, about how many houses would a suburban letter carrier deliver to in one day? What would it, like an average route, consist of? He told me it would be around 400 addresses. Well, we had far more than that being served by this one little post office. And then my auto said, man, how much do you realistically think people would pay for this? My GPS, or Pathfinder as I call her, gave an answer. At this time, most people subscribe to daily newspaper delivery, and that was $2.50 a week. So perhaps if I asked for the same weekly amount, it would sound familiar and therefore right to people. And if a postal worker could deliver to 400 people during a day, and I would have that many members, that many customers, that would be $1,000 cash each week in my pocket with no overhead except for the gas for my little Civic Honda. So this is 1985. I was just curious now to wonder how much buying power $1,000 in 1985 would have today in 2024 to get an idea of what it meant in terms of buying power. So it would be like if you were earning $2,884 a week cash each week, or about 150 grand a year. But my auto still had a huge problem with the opportunity. I am the world's most reluctant salesperson. I dreaded the idea of knocking on doors, trying to convince strangers to buy something from me. So I asked my inner guidance, Pathfinder, what could I say that wouldn't make me feel or sound like a door-to-door salesman? And that is something you have to know about our philosophy at the Road Ahead Cafe. Your life is demanding enough. We don't want you to feel you have to stretch out your comfort zone and buckle down and work hard just to make your day flow more smoothly. We want your self-care to be effortless, or as close as possible, because we want you to get to your destinations, achieve your goals, with as little stress as possible and to enjoy the journey on the way. So I got from my Pathfinder was a little pitch that actually felt good to me. Then I made up a sheet for people to sign, a little note at the top for the post office, authorizing me to pick up their mail. Putting on my coat, scarf, and hat, grabbed my clipboard with the permission sheet, and I went out into the cold night. I walked over to a house a couple of streets removed from ours. And that way, I figured if I did end up looking like an idiot, it wouldn't be in front of anyone I knew because it was a couple of streets away. Rang the doorbell. Lady answered. She was immediately on guard for a sales pitch. I said, "Hi, I'm your neighbor, Peter Fellows. I live just over the way." And she relaxed a little, perhaps thinking that I might be fundraising or something like that. "I guess you've heard we won't be getting home mail delivery for at least 2 years." That phrase completed the thaw. Seeing my clipboard, she must have figured I was going to ask for a signature on a petition, and she was more than ready to give me that. Instead, I said, "Well, I'm picking up the mail for some of our neighbors each day, and they're chipping in with some gas money. So since I'm going there anyway, I wondered if you would like me to do the same for you." And a big smile comes over her face. "Yes, that would be fantastic. I hate going for my mail." "It's $2.50 a week," I said. "I would just need your okay on this note so that the post office knows I'm going to get your mail for you." And then, in a burst of inspiration from Pathfinder, I added, "And first and last week." There was no hesitation. "Let me get my wallet," she said. And within a couple of minutes, I was walking away with $5 in my pocket. And within a couple of hours, I had over $100 in my pocket. It was easy to build up clientele because nearly everyone I spoke to hated going to the post office after a long day at work to stand in line for their mail, and then maybe they hadn't gotten anything. The post office clerks were happy because there's less work for them to do. All they had to do is to drop anyone in my list, drop all the mail into a box, and there were far less people for them to deal with. Oh, that's another bit of philosophy that we believe at Track. For any situation, there are outcomes that will work for you, not at the expense of somebody else, but for mutual benefit. You might not always find one, but there always is one, so why not aim for it? So the post office just dropped the mail of anyone on my list into that box, and each afternoon about 4 o'clock, I picked up the mail, and each morning I would sort it and then drive it around the community delivering it. And most days I was done my route by noon. Pathfinder suggested to make payments easier for myself and my customers that they leave a month's worth of payment, check or cash, in the mailbox at the beginning of each month. Otto said, "Who's going to agree with that?" They all liked the idea. They liked just paying once. I did everything Otto could think of, and when I couldn't think of anything else I could do, I turned to my non-conscious mind, Pathfinder, and that's all it took to get me back on track with a great income, providing a great service, and having a genuine Christmas miracle. Rick?
Wow. That is the best story ever, Peter. Great stuff. Thank you. Frank, what do you got? Oh, you're muted, Frankie. Frank, you're muted. You're muted, Frank. Got to start over.
Right. Yes, first time ever. I'm muted. Well, it was about 5 o'clock in the afternoon that my phone rang. I looked at the screen and I saw that it was Nancy. She answered and said, "Hi, Nance, how are you doing?" It was silent for a moment and then I heard her crying. "I'm feeling so bad," she said. My legs are hurting. I'm shaking all over, so I can't make dinner. Could you help me out and come over?" "Sure." She said, "Well, okay, I can be there in about half an hour," I said. "Is that okay with you?" "Yes, fine," she hung up. I canceled my online meeting and drove to her place. It wasn't the first time I would come over to help her. I was glad to do that and that she allowed me to be helpful. Accepting my help and that of other friends didn't came natural to her. The acknowledgement that you cannot be self-supporting anymore in the way it used to be when she was less ill was very, very difficult for her. It didn't fit to her character. While driving to her apartment, I wondered how I would feel and how I would deal with such a crisis. Feeling sorry for myself, feeling maybe a victim. Could I allow others to help me? How long would I hold on to the idea I do it myself attitude? I don't know. It remained silent in my head. No answers came up. Maybe the answer will come if I'm in such a very bad situation as she is right now, I thought. While parking my car, I felt an immense gratitude for my health coming up. I turned off the engine and closed my eyes for a moment and tuned into my body. I felt a warm, supportive flow running through my whole system. Thank you, thank you, thank you, I said to myself. You are supported, my inner guide said softly to me. Okay. And when I came to her apartment, she was sitting on the couch. Oh my God, I thought, you look bad and exhausted. While greeting her, I smiled and walked over to her. We held hands and talked for a while. I started to make some dinner and she was enjoying the food. She became a bit more cheerful, and that was great. But the worry kicked in later that evening. How does my future look like? She said to me. She knew her situation would get worse in due time, or maybe, more quickly. You never can tell. I didn't know what to say. We sat in silence. Before I knew, I said, "Can you be grateful for something in your life right now?" Well, that I'm still alive and I have two lovely sons. That's something, I said with a smile. But about your body, I mean, about your physical appearance. That I can still move around, eat well, and that my mind is still working good. Indeed, nothing wrong with that, I thought. I took a piece of paper and we started to make a list of all the things she was grateful for. Wow. That's a lot of things, she said, looking at the list we made. It makes me feel so much better now we've wrote them down and gave me a kiss. Thanks, Frank, for this. This is great. I cleaned up the kitchen and we talked a bit, hugged, and I went back to my car and drove home. Gratitude is the attitude, I said to myself. Rick, what about you?
Great stuff, Frank. Really very noble. And so back in 2003, we found that this co-op that we were living in was just too small for two adults and two kids, especially as the boys were growing. They were, 3 and 9 at the time. And we just had no more room. So, but we had this hopeless situation where we had owed much, much more on our mortgage than this unit was worth. So my sister, who was a real estate agent, we were talking and I said, is there any way you think we could sell this thing? And she said, well, you know, things are starting to come back a little bit, but you could give it a try. So we literally just threw out a number. So, you know, I think we maybe owed like 90,000 and this unit was worth like 60,000 at the time. So we were super upside down. So I talked to her owner broker and I said, why don't we just, you know, like list it for, you know, like 150 and just, you know, like, so it's worth 100. Let's list it for 150. So they were going to list the unit for 150. And I said, you know, I just heard that someone, you know, sold a unit for 80, then 90, then 110, like around the corner in the same complex. So let's list it for 165. I just came up with a crazy number. It just kept rising. Well, I didn't know it at the time, but because of that, even though comps were lower and we had a completely brand new unit that we had redone ourselves and it was special compared to some of the other units. So we had an open house and this one guy comes, literally one guy, Sean Cavanaugh, and he buys the unit. But he offers, I remember my sister calling me that day and saying, I don't know if you're open to this, but he offered 160 and And we were, me and Carol were jumping up and down in the car, and we didn't know that we could even start looking at homes. So you may be thinking, Rick, is this the crisis you were handling? You were dealing with this crisis of having an upside down mortgage? No, actually, this dream house that we found in July of that year up in Dutchess County just looked like Shangri-La. And we fell in love with it, and we decided to try to buy it, being that we had this new windfall from this sale of this co-op. So we had enough for a down payment on this new house. And because we saw it in July, which was the beautiful, sunny, green, lush season, we had no idea what was to come. So we moved in October of 2003. We go into this new house, and 1 week into it, the October rains come. And I'm down in Scarsdale, and Carol's up in Poquig, and she calls me crying and says, the house has a foot of water in the basement. Now, you might ask, how did this happen? Because, you know, didn't you have an inspection and all that kind of stuff? Not only did we have an inspection, but we brought in a landscape engineer to study the grasses around the property and say, is any of this swamp grass? Is there any water here? Is this any? And when we got the contract faxed from one agent to our lawyer, the last page was folded over. And at the time, that final page was the flood disclosure. And it was folded over. And my lawyer just thought, oh, I guess the page just got folded, never asked for it to be refaxed. And so, long story short, we found out that this was the wet house. That's what they called it. That's what the postman called it. He came by and said, hey, how you doing? Congratulations, you got the wet house. And it was the most beautiful, lush, low property when we bought it. But it was a flood zone when the rains came in October. So my next door neighbor came over and he brought a fireman's pump and he started pumping the water out. And over 2 weeks, we estimated 300,000 gallons of water was being pumped out of this house and property. And so what did we do? All right, well, the first thing I did was I called the agent and I said, we have a lot of water in the house. Anything that you can, no, I actually sold the house to the Johnsons, the people you bought it from. And then I knew, oh, wow, I got tricked. The same person sold the house to the people before me, sold it to our, you know, our agent was working with them. So they knew that this, and that's why that last page was folded over. So I had a choice to make. I was in a crisis. So first thing I did was I called my sister, who always fixes everything. That's why we call her Remedy. And she found a local contractor who had a bulldozer who came over and he dug a moat, literally a moat around my house, about 80 feet around and 3 feet wide and 2 feet deep. And all the water that was coming out of the woods went into the moat and went around. And this was October, so you couldn't really do much to fix it at that time. But he said, in the spring, we'll come and we'll do some work. We also had to cut down, unfortunately, 220 trees. So he cut down these trees in the backyard and made this what we call a swale. It's kind of like a rounded natural formation in the ground. So when the woods water came to the house, it now went in this swale and went toward this big pond. And so what ended up happening was we had two bulldozers there for 3 weeks. We cut down a bunch of trees, literally changed the whole profile of the property. And we were the fourth owners. All three other people lived with water in their basement. And we changed it. We put in a catch basin with 220 feet of 8-inch pipe. So we did all the work. And while we were doing it, everyone was asking me, are you going to sue the previous owner and the realtor and that whole thing? And I thought about it for a bit. And when we were talking about it, and for those of you who know me, you know that I'm not that type of person. So what I decided was, instead of making it one crisis into another crisis, which would follow me for years and probably never get settled and maybe not even end up in any monetary gain, I took the approach, well, this guy who lived in the house before me was also a young guy with two small kids, and he probably struggled with this because he lived there for 4 years. And it was probably a challenge, and now I know why the basement never had anything in it, even though it was finished. And he probably struggled and he needed to sell it to go move and do something else. And probably things were going on in his life and I didn't want to trade places with him. So I thought, I wouldn't want to be in a lawsuit with him for the next 3 years, nor would I want to be in it with this Century 21 company that was very big in my area and had a lot of properties. I probably wouldn't be able to win with them. And after all, we bought the house and closed. So whether it's my lawyer's fault or mine, so I decided to look at it like waterfront property and then start to think about, well, I bought a house, which I thought was just a house in the country. But what ended up happening was I bought this beautiful waterfront property, and it was kind of like a surprise. And it's now also a beautiful Shangri-La again. And we've lived there for 20 years. So I made the decision not to bring more negativity into my world and not bring lawyers in, which probably would have cost me just as much as the construction. And we have a beautiful piece of property, which will be there forever. There's no more water in the basement or on the property. As a matter of fact, when it had rained a couple weeks ago, we had flooding in the entire area in Dutchess County, and my house was dry. My property was dry. My neighbors on both sides had tons of water in their yard, and we didn't. So every time it rains a lot, we always thank this guy, Tim Whalen, who came with his sons and for 2 weeks bulldozed, much like Mike Mulligan and his steam shovel. And so we lived happily ever after. Peter, final thoughts.
Very nice. Well, okay, final thoughts. Life is a road trip, and we're meant to enjoy the journey on the way to the destinations, our goals, and then we're supposed to arrive there without stress. So we need to refuel our spirit and retool our mindset regularly, but finding the time can be a challenge. And that's why we created the Track app, the Road Ahead Cafe. Just 2 minutes, once a day, Monday through Friday, is all you need. You'll never know when you'll find the one thing that changes everything for your overworked brain. So tempt yourself with our offerings, whether you feel like watching a video, reading an article, being guided through a meditation, listening to a podcast. We have it right here for you, right on the phone. Could this be just what you've been looking for? Well, road test it for yourself. Take advantage of us. Take a complimentary 2-week road test right now. Enjoy a 2-week all-you-can-eat buffet of nourishing food content and see if what we're serving nourishes you and levels up your journey on the road ahead. So check it out at theroadaheadcafe.com. Rick?
Thank you, Peter. Great stuff. Frank, what do you got? What are your final thoughts?
My final thought, gratitude is the attitude, as I said. Whatever causes distress or even a crisis in your life, being grateful is a wonderful way to make you feel less stressed. It won't solve everything at once, but it's a great start. This is a way out to, get out of stress. Connect to people who cheer you up, like I did with my two friends, Rick and Peter. They're a source of fun and inspiration for me, especially when you are a solopreneur. Being a business unit or one is wonderful and challenging, but it can also be quite lonely. I have been there and I didn't want to stay there. That's why we have created the Road Ahead Cafe community. It's the solopreneur community, your self-care pit stop, where you can optimize your personal approach to daily life, find more fulfillment, and receive full support of your fellow solopreneurs. It's the place to recharge, refuel, and retool. Looking forward to meet you there. And as always, what you think about and think about, you bring about. And have a wonderful day, Rick.
Wow. Great stuff, Frank. Thank you. So my final thoughts, when we see life's challenges as opportunity, crisis becomes growth. Thank you for joining us this month on the Road Ahead Cafe. And if we've helped you feel a little better and you feel you'd like to pay it forward, ask yourself, who do I know who might enjoy this podcast? Don't be shy. Share the good vibes. We look forward to getting together again with you next month and in the app on Track. Remember, savor your day today.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Road Ahead Cafe. Hungry for more? Don't miss out. Follow this channel and be sure to subscribe to our email at theroadaheadcafe.com. Thank you for stopping by. See you next time.